Start that audio recording now, and we will post that on our site. And don't worry, it's not video, so you know no one has to worry about that kind of stuff. I have the recording going. So I'll hand it off to you to start the conversation about trees, and then hopefully some of the people who said they could only come late will actually come in at 4, and we can make sure their questions get answered.
Yeah. So my name is Belinda Udelman. I'm a planning and policy analyst with Urban Forestry and Portland Parks and Recreation. And I'm the project manager for the Portland Urban Forest Plan, which is what me and Brian would like to talk to you about this afternoon. So Brian, maybe I'll turn it over to you if you want to introduce yourself and kick us off. So we have a presentation for you to share some information, and then we'll leave plenty of time for questions, answers, all of that.
Great.
All right. And hey, everyone. Sorry, I'm a little bit late. Brian Lando, Strategy and Planning Manager with Urban Forestry. So working with Belinda on this plan. Belinda, were you going to share the PowerPoint? Okay, great. Thanks. All right, I'm just going to get us started here. Okay. We are here to talk about Portland's Urban Forest Plan. This is really the guiding document for how we care for trees in the city, how we preserve the urban forest, how we grow the urban forest. This is not a sort of urban forestry specific plan. This is really what we're going to do collectively as city bureaus, nonprofit partners, community members. So it's really really reflecting that it takes all of us to do this work. Let me go to the next slide. So we're just going to short agenda for this, talk about what is the urban forest, why it matters. Belinda will get into the specifics of the urban forest plan, and then we'll have time for questions after that. First and foremost, why do trees matter? Trees do an incredible amount of work for us, particularly urban trees. Urban trees really address a lot of the challenges that living in an urban environment presents. They clean our air, they capture stormwater, they keep it out of the stormwater system. They lower peak summer temperatures. There is just incredible research, particularly the last few decades, on the impact that trees have on actual human health outcomes. And so I think we're learning a lot more about that, which is really helping to kind of drive a lot of the interest that we've seen in trees in cities, which is really, really exciting. And then a little bit more about why we're here. So we've known for a while that people in Portland have really different sort of varying access to the benefits that trees provide. In Portland, we have a citywide canopy goal of around 33%. So the idea being that one third of our city is covered by tree canopy in some way. We are a little bit below that. We're at about 29.8% right now. And in the last 5 years, we experienced the first actual decline in tree canopy that we've seen in a long time. So that's a real concern for us. But also knowing that despite that, where you live has a lot to do with what your access to trees looks like. On the west side of the river, 56%, we have 56% canopy coverage as opposed to 22% on the east side. And we know that that is generally tied to wealth. So income is a big driver of this. We see this across the city. And so that's a really critical part of this work, particularly as we're going into the urban forest plan. And then I'll turn it over to Belinda.
So this plan, the Portland Urban Forest Plan, is, as Brian alluded to, it's sort of our guide for everything we do for how we manage trees in the city. So this is much bigger picture than like building a better 82nd Avenue. It can inform those types of projects, but it is a citywide effort. And we're looking at all trees, so street trees, yard trees, trees in medians or natural areas. So this is our guide for how we care, you know, all aspects of how we care for trees. So what we're doing to preserve trees, how and where we're planting trees, and how we're caring and maintaining those trees, And just wanting to make sure that we're doing this in a very intentional and strategic way to help address our inequitable distribution that Brian just talked about, and also thinking about climate change and making sure that we're planning for the current changes we're seeing now, changes in weather, and also what we expect to see in the future. So this plan is kind of like any other city plan, like a pedestrian plan or something like that, where it will have a vision and goals of setting where we want to be in 10, 20, 30 years down the road, and then what actions we need to take to get there, and how we should prioritize those actions. So what do we need to do first? What can we do a little bit later? And everything in this plan will be used to guide our management decisions. So it'll guide our programs, how we use our funding, the activities we provide. So a little bit of details of how we're creating this plan and our timeline for the process. So we started this project back in fall of 2023 and are expecting to finish the whole thing. So have a plan ready for adoption, hopefully spring or early summer of 2025. So we've split this plan into the creation of this plan into three different phases. So in the first phase, it was all about listening and learning, understanding where we are now and how we got there. Looking at where is our canopy, where isn't our canopy, what are some barriers to having canopy for residents, for business owners, for city staff, for maintaining trees, for planting trees, what are kind of policy and planning guidance that we already have as a city to help inform this process. And then, and where do people want trees? Where don't they want trees? Kind of all those, what are their priorities when we think about trees and tree care? So that was all phase one. So phase two, which is where we are now, is building on what we learned in the previous phase and thinking about the future. So where do we want to be? What's our vision? What are the goals we need to set to help us achieve that vision? And then what are those recommendations we can be coming up with to help get us there? So we'll be working on these recommendations. We have some that we'll share with you today and want to get your feedback on. So we'll continue to work on those throughout the fall and then put everything together that we've been doing for this plan into the plan itself. So we'll document everything we've done, who we've talked to, and how we've used that feedback. What our vision, goals, and recommendations are, how we will report on progress to achieving those goals over time, and then we'll put the plan out for public review so everyone will have a chance to comment on it before it's finalized. And then we will address all those comments and wrap it up.
So it won't actually start planning anything until after 2025?
I mean, we're continuing to do the work that we already do. So we do plant trees and have programs to do that. So we'll keep doing those things. But any changes to those programs that we might make as a result of this plan, yes, those wouldn't take effect until after it's adopted. But there's many things we're already doing and we'll continue to do and always use what we learn as we go. So a few more details about how we're creating this plan. Just want to highlight kind of who we're talking to and how, in addition to all of you. So we have three advisory groups that are guiding this work. Our Urban Forestry Commission, which is an existing body that guides the city on policy and programs that exist outside of this planning project. So they're a body like the Pedestrian Advisory Committee or Bicycle Advisory Committee. And then we also have a technical advisory committee, which includes city staff and all different bureaus. So not just Portland Parks and Recreation, but also Bureau of Transportation, Environmental Services, Permitting and Development, but also representatives from the state and metro and county. So kind of all the agency and institutional side of things. And then last, we have a community advisory committee. So that includes representatives from people who live in different parts of the city in East Portland and Southwest and North Portland, Some people who are, you know, part of their job is working with trees. So there's someone from Friends of Trees, from Johnson Creek Watershed Council. Some of those groups are represented, but also just everyday community members. So we've been meeting with these three advisory groups pretty extensively throughout the process as we're developing the plan. And then we're also just wanting to get the word out and talking to kind of everyone who's interested or we think may be impacted by this plan. So we have a website, an email list. We did an open house at McDaniel High School in the spring, and we'll do another one when our draft plan is ready so people can come in person and talk to the project team and provide very direct kind of one-on-one feedback if they're interested. We also had a survey that went live in the spring. And then we've done a series of focus groups for underserved communities. So we've held some of those in other languages, talked with the Black community, the Latino community, the Indigenous community, and a couple other groups, just having a very focused conversation about things that might be specific to different groups. And then also just doing a series of discussions and presentations like this one to different city advisory groups, community advisory groups, industrial landowners, just kind of everyone who we think will have something to say about trees and how we care for them. And I'll also say that we are, as much as we can, trying to kind of build on work that's already been done. So I know there was a Portland State University study that happened that looked at trees and some barriers to trees on 82nd. So we are learning from what was provided, the input that was provided in that as well. All right, so that's kind of the where and how of the plan. I also would like to share some of the recommendations that we've been preparing. So these are still very draft, in progress, but just wanted to give provide an opportunity for you to provide feedback on whether you think we're speaking to meeting some of your needs as business owners and community members. So these recommendations are designed to help us think about kind of equitable preservation and care and expansion of the urban forests, also education and outreach, partnerships with community or businesses, and also climate action and monitoring. So this will just be kind of a small set. We have a list of about 40 different recommendations. I'm not going to read each of those. So this is just a summary. So first and foremost, something we've been hearing from the community for a long time is that people want to see citywide city management of street trees, so that the responsibility for taking care of them is not on the adjacent property owner, which it currently is. So that's something we are really highlighting in this plan. Also looking for opportunities to work with the Bureau of Transportation to find financial support or funding to help property owners or business owners make sidewalk repairs that are resulting from conflicts with tree roots. And then a communication strategy. So there's a lot that we at Urban Forestry in the city do already. There's a lot that we want to do, but not everyone knows about it. So there may be questions that people have, resources they need, but they don't know where to go. So we want to put together a communication strategy to be kind of more proactive and just do more to get the word out about what we can offer. We are also looking into a tree care assistance program for low-income property owners. So this would be funding to help with planting, pruning, removal of dead, dying, or dangerous trees, to help reduce some of the burdens and barriers that we've heard a lot from community about reasons why people may not want trees or have trees on their properties. Also looking at opportunities to depave and plant trees, so kind of create new space for trees, both on public and private property. This can be through partnerships with community organizations, with interested businesses, with residents. There's also kind of a whole suite of recommendations that we're exploring to use more innovative or maybe just innovative to Portland, things that we're not doing yet that other cities are doing to help create new space for trees or better support existing trees. Some of you may be familiar with the Trees in the Curb Zone pilot that the Bureau of Transportation is leading. So that's an example of kind of an innovative design strategy for creating more space for trees. We also want to update our tree planting standards. So this is our guidance for where we plant trees, what the distances are for between trees, between infrastructure, things, just kind of where we put them and making sure we're doing that in the best way possible for the health of the tree and the health of nearby infrastructure. And then similar to our communication strategy, just really want to provide more guidance and resources to property owners to support tree planting and tree care, since it can definitely be a lot of work. There's a lot of questions and there's also a lot of knowledge out there. So kind of helping facilitate some knowledge sharing between everyone. All right, so I will stop there. And open it up for questions, comments, or if there's just kind of top priorities, things that you didn't hear mentioned in those recommendations that you think we should consider.
Yeah, I have a bunch, but I'll let others speak first if anyone wants to say something.
I just have a quick question.
Go ahead.
Yeah. One of the projects you said is south of Mill Street. If it goes south of Mill Street, mm-hmm. which is a little bit north of Division, how far south from Mill Street does it go?
Oh, you're talking about for the current Build a Better 82nd Avenue project? I believe it does not go all the way down to Flavelle. I think it goes down a little bit north of Flavelle, but it's a pretty large section down that way. I think it's close to Foster.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And also a question for our speaker. The slides that you just presented, is all of that information on the Portland Urban, oh, where did I write it down? The Portland Parks Urban Forest Plan, are the information that you shared, is that also available on that webpage?
Yeah, most of that is. The recommendations are not because they're still draft.
Okay.
I'll put a link to the website in here.
Thanks. Would you be able to share that slide deck with me, or do you want to, because it's draft, you don't want to have that posted anywhere right yet?
Ryan, how do you feel?
Yeah, I think it's fine. I think that the verbiage will change, but I think the final draft is going to include a lot of the components we just shared. So I think that's fine.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind emailing
yeah,
the slide deck.
Yeah, I can send that over.
I usually like the slide deck and the audio file that would go together on our website just so people can grab those depending on how they take in information.
Yeah, happy to.
Yeah.
Thank you, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. Was that all the questions you had?
It was. Thank you.
Yeah. So I had a couple, one of the areas that that has concerned people, and I've had some city staff who work in other bureaus, I won't out them by saying where they say, really concerned about the green space not being maintained, not just from a tree standpoint, but also just from an ability to keep it from not being used as a trash dump or a human, you know, waste bin. The bioswales in certain parts of our city have become very damaged from their original intent. And so there was some concern, not just about is someone going to go out, water the trees and trim the leaves, but who's going to manage the open soil space around that tree and make sure that it's not just blowing dirt into the roadway and barren, but maintained, because you were talking about adding some maintenance, which is great. I think that's, you know, maintaining all trees in the public right of way would significantly reduce a lot of objections I've heard from both homeowners and business owners who have apprehension about trees and their median. because of those obligations that they take on. And then I'll ask more questions. I'll let you answer that instead of hammering you with a bunch of questions. And hi, Zachary.
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, that's a great question. So I'll speak a little bit first to the tree maintenance component. So we have received funding from the Portland Clean Energy Fund to start to design and build out what a citywide street tree maintenance program would look like. That's going to take several years. That's a pretty significant lift. It's incredibly exciting. It's something we've been wanting to do for quite a long time. There's actually a city ordinance from like 1890 when it was first sort of envisioned of, hey, we should be taking care of these trees that we're planting all over the city. So excited to see it happen. We've got about 260,000 street trees right now. So quite a heavy lift. We haven't discussed sort of what the maintenance around the trees looks like. So I think that is, I mean, we have discussed like, could the street tree maintenance, in addition to pruning, be adding mulch to kind of improve the environment around the tree, and that could improve the sort of condition in a lot of those areas. But yeah, I think we're getting into like stormwater facilities that BES is responsible for, other parts of the right of way that's more of like a PBOT management. That is sort of like an interbureau coordination challenge that. I think, to be honest, that's not something that is part of our work with the forest plan we've gotten into, but it's something we could share. We have a technical advisory committee that has representatives from all those bureaus. It's something that we could share as like, this is part of the experience people have when they're walking on the street. The condition of the trees influences that, but just the condition of the actual environment that they're into.
I know that Seattle's tree right-of-way program, they actually are expanding the use of a rubber base mat that's water permeable to protect the soil around trees while keeping it kind of somewhat clean. So it protects the soil as well. It's not great for if you're going to want to do plants or grass strip or something like that. Grass is a great protector of that, but in a small tree well, that isn't practical. And so in those tree well situations, the permeable rubber mat has, at least from my observation when I've toured Seattle, looking at their tree usage, that's, you know, been there. I'll let Zachary ask a question because I've been talking.
I just more have a more theoretical question, actually. I was just thinking about how, you know, we've had tree canopy in Portland. We were pretty well known for it. And then there, in these recent years, we've really seen kind of this uh-oh moment. And we're dumping tens of millions of dollars into the tree canopy. And I guess my theoretical question is, what happened? Is it really just extreme weather, or was there something else? Was there something about trees timing out, or was it something about pests? Or why are we facing this crisis now that I think we naturally were kind of building tree canopy without this injection of tens of millions of dollars? And I could be wrong on that assumption. Does that question make sense?
Yeah. It's a great question. I don't know, but I'll start and then feel free to fill in anything. Yeah, that's something that we were working with our consultants to better understand. I think there's a lot going on there, to be honest. One thing to note is like most of the growth we get from tree canopy year over year is from existing trees. Our existing trees getting larger. And so like planting is a more sort of like long-term growth strategy. And so I think we've benefited from over the years having an existing kind of robust tree canopy, which is really a reflection of investments made decades and decades ago. So I think that's one thing that we benefited from. We know that we saw quite a bit of decline from increase in storms. I think we're also seeing increased mortality from climate change. And so I think that's something that's new in the last 10 to 15 years that I think is starting to show up in the canopy data that we have. Development's a part of it, but not a huge part. I think that it's, I think that like, you know, when people experience development happening in their neighborhood, they see a lot of trees come down at one time. And so I think it has a really like acute impact on that area. So development's part of it, but when we look at some of the permit data, it's definitely less than half of the canopy loss that we've had. I think it's closer to maybe like a third or a quarter of it. So it's probably, we think it's a variety of factors. One completely untested, unproven theory, though, is that we saw a lot of tree planting in the city at a certain period of time, and a lot of trees were potentially nearing the end of their life cycle. Like I know, like the 30s and 40s, a lot of tree planting happens. So that's not proven, nothing we tested, but just a theory we've had as well. A lot of trees might be meeting the end of their life. So it's a combination of a lot of factors. And I think I think it is a time that really calls for a lot of sort of like investments and assessments of what hasn't been working that we need to change.
Yeah, it is something we're looking at specifically. It's kind of a line item in this project to dig into. It's also looking across the nation. Almost every major city is it's not some many smaller cities are also experiencing canopy decline. It's definitely not unique to Portland, unfortunately. So it's a broader issue.
Great. I had another question, particularly about groundwater access for trees that are in a median on 82nd Avenue. We not only have a wide, cement covered street, but we also have a lot of parking lots that are also covered from, in their entirety in asphalt in such a way that water from the rain really doesn't make its way into the soil underneath the bed of 82nd Avenue. And so the concern is that we're going to plant these trees and water them for the first 3 or 5 years, depending on the contract that the PBOT has for watering and maintaining those trees that are in the median before we have to come up with a plan. The idea is they'll establish a root structure that's strong enough to fend for itself during the dry times. But there's not a significant amount of soil exposure, particularly when you're at the crest of a road, right? If you're at the edges of the road and you have at least access to some of that rainwater, spilling into the green strip that's between the sidewalk and the curb, you get some water in the soil that can kind of be banked there. But at the center of the road, it's been covered for decades. That is some dry soil underneath our road. And me not being a tree guy, I don't know if the root structure can get to the water sources or if the water finds a way, even from blocks away, to level out to a table in which the root structure can make access to it.
Yeah, great,
Oof.
great questions. Belinda's been doing great work with PBOT to address a lot of that. So I think I'll let her share some of the work that they've been doing on that.
Yeah, we've been working with PBOT to come up with kind of maybe doing more than the city might normally do for a median. So we're digging much deeper to provide a lot more soil volume and space for trees. And for their roots and to have like a stronger water holding capacity. We also are not, in most cases, I think there's some exceptions along the corridor. We're doing vegetation and permeable surfaces in between the trees rather than paving, which, is easier for maintenance, but not as good for trees or for cooling. So we are trying a different kind of design approach to help with some of that. And then, of course, we are. It's looking like PBOT will be establishing the trees for 5 years, which will certainly help give them a stronger base than the
Right.
normal 2 years.
But as you investigate this recommendation for urban forestry to take care of all the trees in the public right of way, do you imagine that the city is going to own trucks, watering trucks, to go around and hydrate certain areas where they organically do not get enough rainwater reserves to last through dry seasons?
Yeah, so we typically don't do mature tree watering in the city. So urban forestry does have a lot of watering trucks. We do that for watering trees in parks that we plant. We use contractors for street tree planting and establishment. The scope of work of what the maintenance plan will be for the street tree maintenance program is we're still working on developing that. So I mean, it could be something where we identify particularly stressed trees and then do really sort of like deep soil watering that is effective at kind of helping trees get through some of those hotter, drier stretches of the summer. It's not something we typically do, but it could be a case-by-case basis. Yeah.
Great. I'll take a pause for someone else to ask questions, but I got a couple more. And then there was a subject too that you wanted to make sure you got in before the end of the meeting. Was there, I think I saw something.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to Vicky had a question about the Boiling Week article. So I want to make sure we have a little time at the end for that too.
Oh, sure. Zachary, Kathleen, or Nancy, do you have any questions, or should I launch into my next?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry to dominate, but people ask me a lot of things about trees, so I have notes of things I'm supposed to ask.
Awesome.
Tree selection is, I know you're talking about communication being a core component of what you're hoping to expand with this program, but tree selection for root ball growth as to be less invasive into the sidewalk space, as well as trees that naturally don't go so tall so that they can be planted underneath the utility lines. We have a lot of utility lines on 82nd Ave in Portland in general. We just don't do a lot of underground in the city limits.
Right.
And utility line interference is a big problem, as well as also trees that are planted very tight to active lines. We don't have a parking lane, so a tree that's even planted in a very wide sidewalk with a good planter strip is still going to have a good chunk of its canopy over the edge that's going to have buses, rather big buses, rolling by really close. So how do you have a mechanism? Are you planning on being more aggressive with dictating the species of trees that will survive, maybe ones that have smaller canopies but don't grow tall, and don't have huge root structures? I mean, that's a little bit of a unicorn of a plant, and when you're asking for a growth of a tree canopy but don't grow too tall or too wide or grow too deep, right? Those are three requirements that make it really tough for a tree to be successful, particularly on 82nd Avenue.
Yeah, wow, great question. So I'm putting into the chat a link to our approved Strucci planting list. So every Strucci that's planted in Portland requires a permit from Urban Forestry. It is a free permit. And so the point of that is to ensure that we're planting the right tree in the right place. So it's based on the size of the planting strip, the presence of overhead wires. And so we have specific species that we approve based on the conditions of the site. And one of the things that we've done over the years is we've been able to learn a lot about what trees have really, really shallow roots and are more likely to create those sort of sidewalk conflicts. So every tree on that list, you're not going to have like sweet gums or red maples, which have those really shallow roots. And those are the kind of trees that we see create those kinds of sidewalk conflicts. So people still plant without getting a permit, and that often leads to trees that are not well suited for that site. But as part of the program that we administer, if they go through the correct process, then we're really able to avoid a lot of those issues. And I know that whenever there's a capital project like we have on 82nd Avenue, an urban forestry tree inspector is specifically picking out species that are appropriate for that site. So, particularly with 82nd Avenue, with the median trees, we selected very drought tolerant species that can handle the heat that in the middle of 82nd Avenue they're going to have.
Great. Only a couple more, if that's okay.
Yep.
Signage is a inhibitor. Tree canopy interference with signage is one of the objections that we've heard from business owners who really value the ability for people in a car or on the street being able to find their business, particularly when their business may be set back further, or maybe they have. If done properly and they're fronted on the sidewalk, they have tall windows, which means their signage is right where the tree canopy will cover. And that's an objection to people planting or being responsible for the street trees in front of their businesses. In your evaluation of code adjustments that might help that, I guess this is a question, but it's also a request, is could you look into adjustments to the business signage rules that would allow signs to be when a tree would interfere with approved placement allows them to do either lower placement that's more towards the ground, or even some sort of furnishing zone signage allowed in certain circumstances, you know, under obviously there'd be guidelines and whatnot, so that they are able to have trees and proper markings for their businesses.
Without a huge charge in order to do it.
Yes.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a great, that's the first feedback on that issue that I've heard. So that's, we are working on a scope of work for code changes that'll come after this plan, mm-hmm. To help implement some of these things. So yeah, I'll keep that in mind. I don't know, Belinda, if you might've heard this through some of the outreach you've done with the Urban Forest Plan too, but I think that's a really good note.
Yeah, I know that came up with the PSU study as well. And we do have members from other bureaus on our advisory committee. So yeah, we could definitely surface that to them as well.
Yeah. Nancy?
I actually have heard that the signage rules for 82nd are essentially non-existent. And maybe that's not true, but that I know that I've heard that other areas that have some consistent signage, you know, so that it's easier, particularly in regard to the address, the numbers, you know, that fire departments love you if you actually have numbers on businesses, you know. So anyway, just a couple of things that I've heard about signage on 82nd and getting two places, knowing, you know, how to, where they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's a great point.
One more thing from my list of questions is the cost to replace a tree. There's a lot of people who have inherited properties where a street tree is already been planted in front of their business or home. Maybe it was one that wasn't done with the proper advice, or the advice has since changed in terms of the species of tree. And either the tree is not thriving in that condition, or it is interfering with the road, with the sidewalk in such a way that it's a losing cause. Even if you rebuilt the sidewalk, the root structure has already grown in such a way that the sidewalk is no longer suitable for people with special mobility needs, because it's like a roller coaster. You know, we have some businesses who are facing that. But the cost of cutting down a established tree and replacing it with another tree is substantial. And so I guess it's also not just a question, but a request would be to look at some sort of program. I know you had talked about doing sidewalk maintenance, but either, you know, waiving of street tree replacement fees when they have committed to adding a new tree with a, you know, establishment period, watering and all that kind of stuff. You know, whatever the city needs to do to make contingent that the tree, new tree that's placed there will survive and eventually replace that tree canopy loss that you get by cutting down a mature tree. I just think that that's something that would help people feel better about planting new trees, or even to, you know, expanding the tree canopy that they might already have in front of their business. If they're already suffering a fee and they feel like they're boxed in by the city, they're less likely to fill some vacant space in front of their business or home, because they feel like they're just adding more liability on top of what they already are experiencing. And so that was, those were the thing. I think I've hit on all the major points that have been brought up through the various meetings we've had with the public, as well as that kind of stuff. And I want to make sure you have at least a full 10 minutes or close to it to talk about the Willamette Week article and the trees dying issue.
Maybe, Brian, before you jump into that,
sure.
I'll just say, if you want to stay involved or in the loop with what's going on with the plan, mm-hmm. You can sign up for our project email list. I just dropped a link in the chat. There's a button you can click on that website to sign up for that. So you'll get a notification when we have, as we make progress along the way, I write up a summary and share that out. We'll also have another open house when we have our draft plan, so you can review that online or come in person and share comments on that. All right, Brian, all you.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, Vicky, it sounded like just had some questions about tree establishment, how urban forestry waters trees, cares for trees that we plant. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you guys kind of covered it in the presentation that there's a plan moving forward, but I guess we'd maybe like to be reassured that something's happening in the interim until the plan is approved, right?
Yeah, I mean, I saw
that the landscaper is going to replace those trees, but like, you know, that's a lot of wasted time and effort, right?
Yeah, so I can provide a good bit of additional information and context that I think that article did not communicate to folks. So we do establish our trees. We have a 93% survival rate, which is pretty standard when it comes to tree establishment. Even with watering, a 5 to 10% mortality rate is not uncommon, particularly with these hotter, drier summers we're having, and heat events in particular are really hard on young trees. It is an unnatural thing to grow a tree somewhere, remove it, and then put it somewhere else. So that requires a lot of care. We have 7,000 trees that we are watering right now. And so the 100 to 200 or so that died are, you know, we're about 3% of the trees that we are currently actively watering. With 10 to 15 gallons of water every week. We also have a really robust monitoring program. So I put a link into a check of our 2023 tree planting report. At the bottom, you have all the information that we post every year on how we water trees and how we monitor them. And so it was actually through our regular monitoring that we were able to identify these dead trees and then work with a contractor to ensure that the contractor was aware and that we built in a plan to have those replaced, all of the contractor's expense. So no additional funds from the city were spent. So I think it's just really important to it was an unfortunate event that resulted from a contractor error, but we were working with them to get it fixed. But I think it's just really important to note that we have a really high success rate with our tree planting. And so I felt like the article gave an impression that this is a widespread issue rather than a contractor error. But fortunately, the monitoring that we built in and the provisions in the contract that we included are really getting it fixed.
Right. I don't think we thought it was widespread. It was just this is the second, you know, report of outer East Portland losing trees.
Sure.
Again, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, and it's I think that it's something that with the way that our climate is changing, it isn't that we need to stay on top of. Do trees need more water than they've received in the past? We're constantly looking at what species updates to make. Some species that have done well in the Pacific Northwest are not doing well anymore, and so there's certain species that we don't plant anymore. Another thing I want to point out is these extreme winter events are going to have a big impact on tree planting. All of the trees that were planted from urban forestry by everyone in the region experience incredibly cold weather that they're not used to while they were in their containers, and that has huge damage on tree roots. So we were expecting higher mortality because we know that some of those trees suffered in the winter in ways that you really can't assess until the summer, until they start to leaf out. So yeah, we're planting in a sort of in a changing environment. And so that's something that that's where our sort of monitoring protocol comes in, because we're able to learn from what trees are doing well, which ones aren't, and how do we change.
One of my issues happens to be the roses that we've planted. We have several rose gardens and the water level has hurt them. I mean, because our experts say an inch of water a week is what they need in the summer. Mm-hmm. And many of the gardens we've planted aren't getting that, and they're looking pretty. We're having a contest that's up in the 31st of this month. And I think people may be having trouble finding roses that they think are beautiful. But I actually saw several gardens on my way down from the presentation today at the People's Court. So those were surprises. But anyway, if you know anybody that likes to take pictures, we could use some entries to the Rose Garden. album of roses contest. So that's a nice match with the trees for sure.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Zachary.
You know, kind of riffing off that article, I'm curious how you all respond to public who says $404 per tree. That's really expensive. And I don't know if that 404 also includes the establishment and maintenance 5-year period, or if that's just the planting side. I'd be interested in hearing, like, what is the stock response from the city about what that costs vis-a-vis like a private person doing it, and how is it justified, those prices? Whether you agree or disagree with it, I think it'd just be interesting for us to hear.
Yeah, so I think that cost definitely does not include establishment. The planting of a tree is pretty easy from a labor standpoint. Watering is dozens of visits to that tree over a 5-year period. So it's that is where the real cost comes in. So I had to look into exactly where that $404 price came from. That doesn't sound wildly high to me. I mean, the tree stock alone is probably $150. And then you have to consider the cost to procure it from a nursery. There's storage costs involved. So the contractors typically store it for us. Then when you look at the actual labor to plant a tree, it usually takes two or three folks out from a contractor. So I don't think that's an unreasonable cost. I think when you get into establishment, you're looking closer to like $1,500 to $2,000 a tree. I know that the contractors that we use are very price competitive. There's we've seen quotes that are closer to $4,000 or $5,000 a tree, because it is a labor intensive work to do over a five year period. Yeah, and just to be clear, that's one model of tree planting. That's sort of the fully loaded. We are planting, procuring, watering, doing all the work. We also have a yard tree giveaway program where we buy smaller stock trees, we give them away for people to plant in their yards, and then we still go in and monitor those trees. And so those trees we're planting at $50, $60, $70 a tree, but we're not watering them. People have to plant it themselves. So there's different ways to do it.
Well, my way of doing it was I took twigs that the cherry trees sent off all over the place and planted four double trees in my yard many, many years ago, like 30 plus years ago. So they are huge now and have required a little bit of a pruning off the top. But it worked then. I don't know if it would work anymore.
That's really great. My next door neighbor has a tree that she picked up a seed from Columbia Park 40, 50 years ago, and she planted her yard. Now it's like a 30-foot tree. It's really cool.
Right. Well, we've kind of hit our time, Mark, but I wanted to give an opportunity for any more questions or any wrap-up conversations about this.
A quick announcement is we applied, the 82nd Avenue Coalition applied, this is not a fun announcement, it's a sad announcement, for a PSEF grant to pay like organizations like the 82nd Avenue Business Association to do like door-to-door, person-to-person recruitment of landowners to actually plant trees. And we got the no on that. So we will not be having that community organizing tool at our disposal. We'll have to tackle this problem another way.
Oh, I'm disappointed to hear that. That's too bad.
However, you know, we definitely have partnered. We partner with PBOT to do door-to-door activities with our volunteers. And if there comes a time when you have a budget for doing door-to-door activity and engaging with business owners, I'm sure we would be happy to partner with you and see if we can get some hands on that. Or, you know, if you wanted to get money for a staffer to do that work and you need someone to go along with them and do introductions and, you know, come along and we can also make that work because it is important to us. And the door-to-door is really essential. The emails, surveys, they don't get to the majority of people. I put in last week and the week before, I put in a bunch of days just going door-to-door for the Build a Better 82nd Avenue place, just handing out material and cards to people, just trying to get them interested in it. And some of them hadn't heard about it. I had maps in hand and kind of went through it. And their thing is, I'm not going to come to this meeting. I have no time to do that, but I'm telling you, and you have to do it. You have to go and represent me. And we hear that a lot, and that's what we try to do. But, I think the door-to-door is an essential part of any outreach effort. So I hope that can make its way into your plans.
Yeah, that's great.
May I make another announcement?
Sure.
Hawthorne Street Fair is this Sunday, 11 to 5, if any of you haven't heard that it's happening want to have a place to go on Sunday. Yeah.
And I put the Rose Garden contest link in the chat there. Was a question, Vicki, you had a question about the recording. I will, as soon as I get the slide deck, I will put up the audio recording of this and the slide deck at the same time.
Thank you.
On our site. Yeah, so it's the same. It's the site where we have this announcement on 82ndavba.com, and there's a link to the roundtable page, and that's where we place this information. I'll try that out early next week.
Great.
Cool.
Great. And I think just the last thing I'll note for Zachary and Jacob in particular, there will be an RFP coming out this fall for the work that we're doing as part of the PSEF-funded Equal Tree Canopy, which is going to be planting a lot in East Portland. There is a lot of money for outreach-specific work as part of that. So I will make sure that you all are on whatever list goes down to announce that. There's also the Equal Tree Canopy Advisory Group that's made up of community partners to sort of guide what that looks like. So that could be a great opportunity for exactly that kind of work.
Great.
Super.
Thanks.
Awesome.
All right.
Thank you so much for having us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Sorry, less people were here because I think we moved the time around on everyone. But I think the recording is how a lot of people interact with it anyhow.
Great.
Have a great weekend, y'all.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone.
All right.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.